Thanks, John and Jessica, for the kind invitation. Today we'll be talking about nitrogen and water in Australia. Thank you. With the exception of some pockets where there are good soils and high rainfall and high productivity, most of Australia is constrained by both water and nitrogen supply. One of the issues I always have with conferences, you have to present the title 6 months ahead, and by the time of the conference, you're thinking of something else. So this is a better description of the topic. So the question we're asking is how selection for yield in these environments has changed the phenotype of wheat, and what can we learn from it? So I briefly touch on the environments with working in. So there are three features of rainfall that are important. One, obviously, is the amount. The amount of rainfall sets the broad patterns of land use. North of that line, it's too risky to grow crops. That's where the pastoral industries are established, mostly cattle. South of that line, there is grain or grain and mixed farming. For the same amount of rainfall, the next factor that's important is the seasonality. These vectors are one for each location where we have long-term records of rainfall, and they show two things. One, the intensity, the length of that arrow is how seasonal rainfall is, and the other is the timing. So a vector like this is 1st of January is higher concentration of rainfall, and then we have the full circle to 31st of December. So we have three main regions in terms of seasonality. In the north, so that region is summer rainfall. Here we have a shift to winter rainfall, and the west growing region is also winter rainfall, and here we have a transition. Those small vectors are showing no seasonality, equal rainfall all through the year. And this sets the menu for cropping. So growers here can grow winter cereals, wheat, sorghum, temperate and subtropical legumes. And that's the only part of Australia where double cropping is feasible. In here and here, no summer rainfall means the menu is much restricted. And winter rainfall has selected for wheat-based cropping systems. If growers could, they would grow continuous wheat. So the seasonality of rainfall is important. It shapes the options and it shapes the ways crops are grown. So for a summer rainfall location, this is the probability of having different amounts of water in the soil at sowing. So crops grow, wheat grows with stored water and a little bit of in-season rainfall. But in the south, with winter rainfall, it's the mirror image. Crops grow on dry soil, and most of the water is from in-season rainfall, and that shapes the system completely. Growers are different. Their attitude to risk is very different. How they manage nitrogen is different, and the phenotype of wheat is also different. So the angle of seminal roots adapted to the northern regions is very vertical, so they are deep roots, but in the south, we have this sort of phenotype, shallow roots. There's no point in deep roots if there's no water. Plus, in those environments, there's also nasty chemicals in the subsoil, sodium, boron, to toxic levels. So that's all related to seasonality. The third factor is the size structure of events for the same amount and for the same seasonality of rainfall, whether we have a dominance of small or large events influences the fate of water in the ecosystem, and to some extent the fate of nitrogen and solutes. So we've been using these power laws where we relate the number and size of events in a log-log scale, and it's roughly a straight line. So we resume the whole pattern of rainfall structure in one number, that's the slope of that line. So a flat line means a dominance of large events, a more vertical line means dominance of small events. And we show that, as you would expect, with small events, you have a larger proportion of rainfall that's lost through soil evaporation, but also more mineralization. So that's one trade-off between rainfall and nitrogen. With large events, this more proportion of rainfall into deep drainage, runoff, and with all the consequences associated with that. So we'll be talking of wheat-based systems in the south of southern Australia, where we have low and uncertain rainfall. That's important in terms of risk. Winter-dominant small events. Soils with low organic matter. And here's the key link between rainfall and nitrogen. Because rainfall is uncertain, there's a risk associated with using nitrogen. And growers manage risk under fertilizing. So even we have a very dry environment, we have an environment where nitrogen is also in short supply because of the soils and because of the financial risk associated with fertilizer. So growers have to make a decision on fertilizer, and that decision involves a trade-off. So this is the nitrogen-driven trade-off between the efficiency in the use of water and the efficiency in the use of nitrogen. We need nitrogen to have high water efficiency. Nitrogen increases the transpiration as a fraction of ET, and nitrogen increases biomass per unit transpiration. So nitrogen deficiency will drop water efficiency, but each unit of nitrogen will have a lower return. So growers find their way in that trade-off. But this is by no means unique to this system. This is universal. All crops will have this nitrogen-driven trade-off between the efficiency and the use of both resources. You cannot get the maximum of both at the same time. Okay, so we ask this question of how breeding for yield has changed the phenotype of wheat. We set this collection of 13 varieties. The first three are tall. From this condor on, they are all semi-dwarf, and we selected them based on agronomic adoption. They were very successful varieties on the time, and no trends in phenology. There's a little bit of variation in flowering time, but there is not a trend in the sense that new varieties are longer or shorter. We intentionally excluded extremes. So what we find in this series is an increasing yield associated with reduced competitive ability. New varieties, high-yielding varieties, are less competitive, and increase in both harvest index and biomass. The increase in biomass has been associated with an increase in radiation use efficiency. So new varieties have greater photosynthetic capacity. And that's related to a number of changes in the nitrogen economy of the crop. So new varieties have more nitrogen uptake, but also more nitrogen at the bottom of the canopy. There is also more radiation at the bottom of the canopy, but the two have been, to some extent, uncoupled. The link between the extinction of nitrogen relative to the extinction of light has been, in a way, relaxed. We didn't find evidence of change in water use. With the increasing yield, we're having higher water insufficiency. We don't know much about the partitioning of ET, and that's a question mark. Stomatal conductance has increased. And for all these traits, we have confidence. We have done many field experiments. Root biomass, we have just one experiment where we find that new varieties have smaller root systems. And we're starting to test for resistance to root diseases. In this, you would expect selection for yield will give you varieties that are more resistant to the dominant pathogens. So this is how the data looks. So we have a trait yield as a function of year of release, different environments. We remove the effect of the environments calculating the deviation. So these 3 points are one variety and the three environments. And the slope is the rate of change in whatever trait we measure it. So that's the progress in yield from breeding over 50 years in Australia, 25 kilos per hectare per year. To put this in context, the red points are breeding in Australia, and the rest are breeding in other parts of the world. That's been known for a long time. We are building this data set. Essentially, breeding for yield is returning higher rates in better environments. So the environment is constraining how much genetic gain can be achieved. We said we didn't find changes in ET, and we extended our 50 years with previous work. So this is almost a century of breeding, showing that essentially yield is increasing with the same water use, so the water insufficiency is increasing. In the 80s, there was this benchmark of 20 kilos of grain per hectare per millimeter that has been used very extensively as a reference in farming. But the point is new varieties are close to 25, and there are consequences for benchmarking. If we don't update our benchmark to new varieties, we'll be underestimating yield gaps. Stomatal conductance has increased, and this is not rare. So this review by Roche, he's showing that in many cases, soybean, winter and spring wheat, cotton, selection for yield has increased stomatal conductance. We don't know exactly what's going on, but this is the opposite to what you would expect in terms of transpiration efficiency, where stomatal closure at high BPD would increase transpiration efficiency. From the number of crop and environment combinations, say cotton in the USA, the early work of John Radin, wheat in Mexico, and our own work, what we think is happening is warming. High temperature is important, and canopy cooling overrides transpiration efficiency. A side comment, we've been hitting vineyards for 10 years now, and one of the main observations, one of the most consistent responses is that high temperature increases stomatal conductance. So we might have 10 degree difference between control and heated ambient, but the canopies might be 1 degree hotter in the hot treatments. And it's not only that. When we look at leaves that developed under high temperature, they make in larger stomata. And in other varieties, we find in higher density of stomata and xylem diameter is increasing with high temperature. So it seems that the plant, one of the adaptations is pumping up more water under high temperature. So back to our wheat crops, radiation use efficiency increase with selection for yield. And this is unrelated to leaf photosynthesis. We measure flag leaf photosynthesis and respiration, and there are no changes. When we look at the distribution of light in the canopy, here we have three varieties. This is the oldest in the series and is tall. Condor is the oldest semi-dwarf, and Gladius is the newest semi-dwarf. So clearly an effect of height. Shorter varieties have more penetration of light down the canopy. But if we compare the two semi-dwarfs, there's still some difference. So it's something changing in the architecture of the canopy where we have more light at the bottom. So it means more leaves are contributing to photosynthesis, and that's why the canopy photosynthesis is increasing. Nitrogen uptake has increased quite markedly. So, but this is partially because biomass is larger. So when we remove the effect of biomass with this nitrogen nutrition index, we still find a trend. So selection for yield is increasing nitrogen uptake, and then as improving the nitrogen status of the crop. So this is Jairo's recent work with boxes with glass to look at the root systems. And what he's finding, it's just one experiment, what he found is new varieties are getting more nitrogen from soil, but with slightly smaller root systems. So it seems that this pressure for yield in this environment with low water but also low nitrogen is increasing the nitrogen uptake per unit root length. But this is just one experiment. So this is a snapshot of the canopy at flowering. So what we see is all varieties had, so new varieties have greener leaves all through the canopy, from the bottom to the flag leaf. But the larger differences are at the bottom of the canopy. So there's more nitrogen, greener crops, but there's also a change in where they are greener. And it's particularly at the bottom where there is more light as well. So this is the profile of nitrogen and the profile of light. Here, one means the top of the canopy, so that we normalize both traits at the top of the canopy, and then this is the extinction of nitrogen relative to the extinction of light, and we see it's flatter in the new varieties. So that's quite a... So these are the extreme varieties to show the meaning of this parameter, and this is how this parameter has changed through time. Okay. So there's a relaxation in the extinction of nitrogen relative to the extinction of light. And that's what's one of the factors that's accounting for the photosynthetic capacity of the canopy, how it's increasing with breeding. Now, I would like to ask you to think for a moment the meaning of this. We think of breeding for yield as a blunt instrument, don't we? But if I give you money for a project where I ask you, give me a variety which gets more nitrogen from the soil, has a different canopy structure, there's more nitrogen at the bottom of the canopy, more light, higher photosynthetic capacity, with fewer roots, I think that would be a challenge. But that's what selection for yield has achieved. I will finish by comparing these changes in the nitrogen, thank you, in the nitrogen traits of wheat in Australia with other systems. Here we normalize the trait. So these are the traits, and 100 is the newest variety. So what happens here is the nitrogen uptake has increased at the same rate as yield. And yield per unit nitrogen didn't change, neither nitrogen harvest index or grain protein. So this is wheat in Australia. This is wheat in the UK, this and this row, two levels of yield, and this is wheat in Argentina. Nitrogen uptake didn't change or changed less than the increase in yield. So in all those systems, we have an improvement in yield per unit nitrogen. Nitrogen harvest index didn't change or change very little, so this improvement in yield per unit nitrogen was achieved at the expense of protein. So these are a bit older varieties, 1900 to 1980s. This is a fair comparison. This is last 50 years in the UK. From top to bottom, we have 0 to 350 units of nitrogen, and the picture is similar. So yield is increasing much faster than nitrogen uptake. So nitrogen uptake is increasing little or not at all. And that's increasing the nitrogen use efficiency. With little or no change in nitrogen harvest index, protein is declining. So this is the trade-off. So durum is interesting because you would expect some concern with protein. These are 100 years in Italy and two rates of nitrogen. Yield is increasing faster than nitrogen uptake. Nitrogen uptake is increasing significantly, but doesn't quite match the increase in yield. And then we have an increase in yield per unit nitrogen uptake and a slight drop in protein. So when we put all this together, this is the rate of change in nitrogen uptake and rate of change in yield. And this is the condition to increase nitrogen use efficiency. You need to increase yield faster than nitrogen. And this is the rate of change in protein and the rate of change in yield per unit of nitrogen uptake. And it's straight on the 1 to minus 1 line. So increasing yield per unit nitrogen can be achieved at the expense of protein. So selection for yield in these environments where we have shortage of water and nitrogen in Australia, so they're very dry environments. We're talking of 300 millimeters of rainfall per year, 2-3 tons crops, but also shortage of nitrogen. And what we find in is the changes in nitrogen traits are more important than the changes in water-related traits. The idea that we need to increase nitrogen use efficiency, in a way, it's trivial. So if you select for yield and let protein go, you would increase nitrogen use efficiency. Is that what we want? Some questions that remain. The trade-off between stomata maximizing water use efficiency and adaptation to worming is interesting. And we are looking at roots in a bit more detail now. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Victor. We have 4 minutes for discussion.
We haven't looked at that in wheat. We have subflow sensors. We didn't finish analyzing. I think there's some evidence of night transpiration, but I think that's been overstated because we are confounding night transpiration with rehydration. So once you rehydration, so the crop is, so you measure water uptake, but doesn't mean the crop is transpiring. So part of that is transpiration, but part of that is not. But things that happen at night are interesting. So we had little experiments where we change night temperature and say some traits are responsive to night temperature more than day. I'm not aware of growers changing the planting densities. This is a very relevant question. It's important because in this in the cropping regions of Australia, in particular in the south and the west, the early systems were mixed farming, wheat and sheep, and there was ryegrass as a part of the system, and ryegrass is developing resistance to pretty much all herbicides. So this is a great concern with wheat, and there are some programs that they're looking, moving backwards, getting wheat that are a bit lower yielding, but more competitive with wheat. So that some breeding programs are looking at that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we haven't tested that. We have the seed, we can test that. Mm-hmm. Part of that might be the partitioning of ET between components, but another thing that was counterintuitive on the first side is, so we have high stomatal conductance, but temperature in the new varieties is higher compared to the old ones, and that's because difference in architecture, particularly the tall varieties have better aerodynamics in some say, so the canopies are cooler.
We will reserve the other questions later on. Maybe we'll save time in between and then we can follow.